Joan Hamburg inviting you to my original podcast. Let me tell you, meet former American security advisor to the Obama administration, Susan Rice. Come with an insider and find out what's really going on. Be there. Welcome, everyone, to my podcast, Let Me Tell You. And I know I'm always being asked, how do I get your podcast? Well, let's make it very basic. Go to WABCradio.com. Just search for the Joan Hamburg, Let Me Tell You. Or wherever you get your podcasts, it's there. iTunes, Apple, you'll see. It's very easy to find. And during these podcasts, I share with you my week. No matter what it is, where I go, I went to see Betrayal, the Pinta play. It was actually a big smash, the West End in London. It's at the Bernie Jacobs Theatre here, and it's quite stunning with an extraordinary cast. There's so much going on that I never know. 24 hours a day in New York City. And by the way, a happening that's really being watched everywhere, Nordstrom's department store, at a time when all the naysayers are saying that retail is dead. Mourn retail. Nordstrom's comes and opens a 320,000 square foot, seven level store devoted to women and children's apparel right at 225 West 57th Street. There's actually a men's store across the street. In that store, not only fabulous clothes, and Nordstrom's is famous for service. It's really unreal. They have seven food and beverage options, more than any other Nordstrom's. They brought chefs from Seattle to do it. And I have to tell you, a friend went over the weekend. She said, I couldn't even get into the restaurants. They were so crowded. She finally got into the Asian fusion. But everything is there, from Wolf, an Italian-inspired, Janine's for pizza, all these good restaurants. And the most important thing is the service. Oh, my gosh. We've had two classic openings. Wegmans, the supermarket, opened in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, which in itself is worth a trip. They have so many events going on there. And Wegmans, another one, 74,000 square feet. People literally came from all over. Now, I've been asked, are you a Wegman fan? Well, we don't have one near where I live or work, so I can't answer that. But I've certainly heard the legend and couldn't wait to get there and buy some of their things. So you've got two happenings to come to in these stores, things you're going to love. You know, it's interesting. We were talking today with our pals from New Jersey about a long New Jersey tradition. It's called Sloppy Joe's. But it's not Sloppy Joe's like you think of hamburger meat all mushed up. It's these extraordinary sandwiches of cold cuts, but wonderful cold cuts. Ham, pastrami, turkey, roast beef, coleslaw, cheese, tongue. I can't even say the word, but my husband loves it. And there are two places, Town Hall Deli in South Orange, and Milburn Delicatessen on Milburn Avenue. They are really a treat. I first met them when I was at college and paying a condolence call to a friend who lived in South Orange. And at the condolence call, they were serving Sloppy Joe's. It was like, what's this? It's so delicious. I've had them so many times over the years. In fact, when I did a screening of one of my son's movies, I called Town Hall Deli and had them cater it. Sent in all. And there were a lot of New York people at the screening. And they were like, what's this? They are so delicious. So we were sitting here drooling over the thought of Town Hall Deli, Milburn Deli. And then I said, guys, what about Harold's? Well, I know Harold's because I spent a lot of time in New Jersey. There's a Harold's in Edison, New Jersey, King George's Post Road. I never had a sandwich anywhere as big as Harold's. One sandwich can feed like four people, maybe more. Fantastic. And Harold's chicken soup. I used to drive there, go out of my way to bring that home. So there's tons of places in New Jersey that are spectacular. But these three were our persistence of memory today. Things we wanted to share with you if you haven't been there. Meanwhile, we've got such a good podcast coming up. I hope you really enjoy it. I have never met Susan Rice, who under the Obama administration was the U.S. National Security Advisor, and she had also worked with the Clintons. Since she was a kid and got out of Stanford, she's done public service, but her story about being brought up, the daughter of immigrants from Jamaica and former slaves from South Carolina, is unbelievable. And her parents' obsession with you can do it and don't take garbage from anyone, just step over it and do it, a lesson that she and her brother learned early on in life. She's a most amazing person. I'm really interested in your opinion. Forget politics, everyone. It's this survival ability, this intensity, and a mother and a wife and a friend, still her friends from high school, grew up in Washington, D.C., and her grandparents lived in Maine, in Portland. So an amazing American story. I'd love all of you to hear her. So settle down and enjoy. I'm Joan Hamburg, and this is Let Me Tell You. And I'm really happy to introduce you to Susan Rice, whose book has been talked about everywhere on the bestseller list, big New York Times Sunday list, Tough Love, My Story of Things, of the Things Worth Fighting For. Susan, you know, was the National Security Advisor to Barack Obama. She was U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., and she continues to do amazing things. But Susan, I'm so happy you're here.
It's great to be with you, Joan. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I finished the book, and it's, for those of us reading it, an amazing journey because we go through so many of your lives, your growing up, your family, your relatives, your own children, your husband, working for the government in so many capacities, the good and the bad, and you are the ultimate survivor.
Well, thank you. I wanted to share with as broad an audience as possible a bit about my family, my upbringing, my service in government, and what I've learned from that. Because, frankly, both as a mother, as a daughter, as a policymaker, and the descendant of slaves on one side and Jamaican immigrants on the other, I've had some extraordinary opportunities as I've been privileged to serve our country under two presidents. And I think I've learned some lessons that are valuable to anybody who wants to compete and thrive in unforgiving environments, and if they've been knocked down, to get back up. So that was my main motivation, and I'm glad to hear you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it thoroughly, and it's a lot of tough lessons, and you have to have a lot of thick skin, too. I was curious, when you finished the book, and the book is over 500 pages, but honestly, this is to our audience, it reads, you know, it's not just this is my memoir. You're sort of riveted to it and become intimately involved, not only with politicians, but with a family that really did pursue the American dream despite all the obstacles. But was it cathartic for you when you finished this to look back? It's almost like looking in for us and saying, how does someone do this?
Well, Joan, you know, truthfully, it was cathartic because I feel like, you know, really since high school, I've been running almost at a sprint speed through my education, through my early career, where at 28, I had my first job at the White House in government, and then all the way through, frankly, till the end of the Obama administration with, you know, two kids in between and two wonderful parents who sadly passed during the Obama administration. And so I really hadn't had time to breathe and reflect. And so this was an opportunity to look back over my experiences, including some very painful experiences during my childhood with my parents' divorce and their brutal breakup, and how that affected me, and, you know, what did I learn out of that experience, which I think turned out to be, in essence, both resilience and mediation skills, which I didn't know I might need later. And then, you know, what I learned during the Clinton administration, where I was a relatively young but senior foreign policy staffer and an assistant secretary of state, where, frankly, I made some mistakes that, you know, thankfully I was able to correct for the most part and learn from. But it was useful for me to have that moment and time to reflect. And I hope it's useful for others as well.
I'm just curious. There were so many details. Did you keep diaries and notes even from when you were a kid?
No, you know what? I didn't keep a diary.
So how
quite
did you
deliberately
remember?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, when you don't keep a diary, what you recall and what bubbles to the surface are those things that are most important as you reflect. And so inadvertently, by not keeping a diary, it was sort of a culling process that helped me figure out what mattered to me in retrospect, what things had been impactful. And then for my family history, a lot of that was, you know, what I'd learned orally from both parents. But I also went back and did a good bit of documentary research, drawing on my original training as a historian, to flesh that out. And then for the policy portions that, you know, come later in my career, many of the issues that I focus on, and I had to be selective, I couldn't, you know, cover everything, were those that were most salient in my mind and experience, most formative. But I also used a lot of contemporaneous open sources, newspaper articles,
right,
you know, calendars, that sort of thing,
to
validate my reflections and recollections.
You know, you were a child who ran as fast as she could, and the expectation was that there, you were not going to fail, you were going to make it. And this was part of your DNA. And your parents, despite obstacles, made it and really did incredibly well, despite what was thrown in their way along the path.
Yeah, well, they really had a passion for education, you know, for trying to excel and to rise above their parents' generation, and they instilled that in me and my brother. You know, our expectation was that we would do our best, and, you know, that, you know, doesn't mean we'd succeed in everything, but we had to try, and, you know, that we had to serve, that we had to be about more than ourselves, which was my family tradition on both sides in a very profound way. They didn't prescribe how that service needed to take shape.
Right.
It could have been in the private sector. It could have been in government. It could have been in the military.
It could have been a teacher. Right. It didn't matter.
But we had to serve.
And serve you did. And all the stories, how did someone young like you, and juggling in the beginning, kids, nursing, dealing with power plays that you have to be in it to even understand it, and horrible things, the genocide in Rwanda, medical emergencies like the Ebola epidemic, And we are now up to our eyeballs in Russia and China, but you dealt with enormous challenges then. So did you sometimes, after you put this book together, even marvel at how you could possibly do that? Go home, talk to the kids, talk to your husband, and I still don't get how you could pull it all off.
Well, you know, it's true. As I look back on it, I do wonder how I just didn't run out of steam at a certain stage.
And the
import of the jobs, the pressure, but also the centrality of the issues sort of keeps you going, and adrenaline keeps you going. And I was blessed every step of the way to have an extraordinary husband and partner, and kids, frankly, who were supportive of the work I was doing. And while my parents were healthy, you know, their extraordinary support too. So, you know, I've no doubt when you hit that finish line at the end of 8 years of an administration, mm-hmm. which I did twice, you sort of collapse at the other end of the line, and need to recover. But I did somehow manage to keep running, and it's nice now, with some distance from it, to be able to not only reflect but to regroup and recharge my batteries and to have my freedom. So I feel very fortunate to have had the extraordinary privilege to serve, but also the time now to look back on it.
And what you're doing now, most people would consider enormously complicated and hard, but I love that this is almost relaxing. A research fellow at the school at the American University, at the Belfer Center for Science, at the Kennedy School, and it goes on and on. Plus the challenge of writing this book. What did your kids think? Did they read the book, or are they holding it?
No, but my kids were wonderfully helpful. I've got one who's 22, who's a senior in college, and my son, and a
17-year-old. Is he at Stanford like
he's
you?
He's at Stanford, yep. Uh-huh. And he's my conservative. And I have...
You have to have one in the family.
Somehow, yes. And then our daughter is about to be 17. She's a junior in high school. Uh-huh. She's the very progressive one. And both of them very kindly read all of it. And mm-hmm. important to me that they did, because it's quite personal, including in some ways about them.
Exactly.
And talk about some of the health challenges they've had and development challenges and, you know, how they've evolved into the wonderful young people that they are, but not without some pain and fits and starts. So it was important to me that they, as well as my brother and obviously my husband, were comfortable with what's in the book, because it's quite
personal,
raw in some respects, and it reveals a lot about our family.
No, it is. And it's good things about the family, but it's about being able to survive, first of all, being a public person and taking the garbage. You know, someone always has to be a victim, and you went through a lot. And came out the other end, which...
Well, you know what, Joan, I appreciate that. And the truth is, you know, you only have two choices.
Right, stand up.
Or get back up. And my parents taught me that you always got to try to get back up. And so that's sort of how I've approached it.
Did you bring up your kids like your parents brought you up?
I hope so. I hope I turn out, my husband and I turn out to be half as effective parents as I was blessed to have. My parents were, despite their brutal divorce, they were always, each of them, there for me and my brother. Uh-huh. And, you know, we had a lot of the normal mother-daughter tensions.
Of
and,
course.
You know, difficulties, but I feel very blessed in that, you know, they were there and there for me through, you know, until very recent years. And they're to be great grandparents for my children, so.
Right, it's a gift.
It is a huge gift.
And I only wish they had been there to read the book, because it's a great tribute to an American family.
Well, thank you so much.
No, I really thought this is the time when everyone, no matter what your belief is, should read this book, because it's really the story of democracy, too. And we don't get that very often. Everything is divided today, including the crop of books that come along from political leaders. And I didn't find that in your book at all.
Well, I appreciate that. I do hope that it will be a book that can be of value to people from all different perspectives. And in the last chapter, I talk a lot about the necessity of bridging our domestic political divides.
Right.
And I talk about it from a very personal perspective of the challenge we have inside our own family, but I also talk about how it manifests itself on a national level and how it really is, in my judgment, our greatest national security vulnerability. So we have to repair these divides, and we've got to be deliberate about it, but also not despairing and recognize that over the course of our history, we've come through much more painful and divisive times, you know, from the Civil War and Reconstruction to McCarthy era and Vietnam. And we've come through them arguably stronger, but certainly unitary. And that's what we've got to do now. And I try to lay out some very concrete ideas about how we can approach that, including recommending that we very seriously consider mandatory national service for all people in this country, 18 to 22. You know, if they could spend 6 to 12
right,
months.
Like they do in Israel.
Yeah, but not necessarily military service.
Uh-huh.
This is
regular,
I'm
national.
Civilian service. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you choose to serve in the military, that's fine and great. But this would be everybody doing good works together that benefit the country, whether it's, you know, reforestation or, you know, laying broadband or what have you, so that we know each other as human beings despite our very different backgrounds, socioeconomic circumstances, you know, race, religion, geography. Because, Joan, it's really much harder, I think, to hate people when you know them. And
exactly.
So knowing that we have a common enterprise, that we are all Americans living in this country with, in, you know, different perspectives, but many ways common aspirations, is, I think, very important to be reminded of and become reinvested in.
Tough Love by Susan Rice. And Susan takes you not only to the White House, but to Portland, Maine, to her own family's house, and shares all this with you. And also, you know, when I was a kid, my mother always used to say, it's okay, you have to survive your kids. And I think that's a really important life's lesson. Whether you produce conservatives or whatever, what are you going to do? We lived in rural Vermont for years, and what was there to do except we went to every auction known to man and bought things we could never use? So I have kids who don't like anything, who just want bare, no stuff. And first I took it personally, and then I thought it was very funny. So we have to deal with all of that. Now, I was disappointed. I always thought you would run for office despite all the pain as well as the glory that came with being in a power position. That's not going to happen immediately?
Well, not immediately. I did give some consideration to running for the Senate against Susan Collins.
That was a good idea. We sort of annoyed at her.
Yeah, she deserves a robust challenger, in my opinion, particularly after the Kavanaugh vote.
Yeah, but that was too... Okay, we'll talk about that another time.
But for personal family reasons, particularly my daughter being in her junior year in high school, it didn't feel like the right time mm-hmm. for our family to
right.
uproot ourselves. But I haven't ruled out running for office in the future or serving in an appointed position mm-hmm. If the circumstances are right and if I feel I can be of good service.
Well, we know you can, and I look forward to that time. If you haven't read it yet, get hold of it. It's already on the New York Times bestseller list. Tough Love by Susan Rice. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you so much, Joan.
We'll talk again. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.